Terry, you're here tonight to tell us about some special trees that are in the Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin.
Yes, Derek, I was up in the National Botanic Gardens, or as we called them when we were kids, we called them the Bots. And they're one of my all-time favourite spots to visit. And lots of visitors, they like to visit the gardens, particularly those magnificent torn or glass houses, which were recently renovated about 20 years ago, I think. And they'd like to go and see the collections of orchids and cacti and succulents. But the gardens, they also boast a large number of mature trees, which look stunning at this time of the year. And recently, I met up with the director of the gardens, Dr. Matthew Jebb, who then introduced me to some of these interesting specimens.
Now, Terry, this is the first tree I see every morning when I step out of my front door, a giant sequoia, the redwood, the giant redwood from California.
God, so many people would be so envious of you to walk out your front door and then to see that. It's a magnificent tree.
It is a fantastic tree, sequoia dendron, and it is the biggest living thing on this planet, and that makes it very thrilling. People tend to think of, you know, is the blue whale the biggest living thing? No, it's a tree that grows in California.
Mm. Now, as we walk up through the gardens here, the next tree that I see here is a magnificent specimen, and I do believe it's called the Tree of Heaven.
That's right, Ailanthus, which is Latin for heaven. Mm. And it was named really because the early European collectors travelling to Southeast Asia, obviously when they got ashore off their sailing boats, thought, wow, you know, what a big tree climbing up to heaven. So they're not actually the tallest trees around, but their name derives from the fact that they are reaching up to the heavens. So Ailanthus is a tree from Southeast Asia, and it's a fabulous looking beast here. You can see with its huge long leaves. Each leaf is nearly 2.5 feet, 3 foot long.
Yeah, and I believe there are both male and female trees, which is unusual because most trees contain both male and female parts.
That's right. Most of the flowering plants are hermaphrodites, so they have the male and female organs in every flower. But there are always exceptions, and there are a number of plants, especially amongst the conifers, where we have separate males and females. And it becomes very interesting then, because if you only have a few individuals around, it can make breeding very risky in that you might all be male or all be female. So being hermaphrodites has been of huge benefit in the evolution of flowering plants.
Is this tree common in Ireland?
Not at all. No, it's an unusual thing. So we have a number of different species of Tree of Heaven here. But there's a slightly sinister side to them, which is that they are already banned for sale in France because they have proved overly invasive. So they've been introduced to our gardens for the last 1.5 centuries, but now climate change has meant that they are suddenly producing seeds, fruits, and in the south of France they are spreading horrendously.
So in Ireland then you would hope that it doesn't spread?
We will keep a very close eye on it. This individual here right next to us began flowering and fruiting only about 10 years ago. Prior to that, we hadn't really noticed it as something producing either flowers or fruits. But now, every autumn, a huge crop of seeds drop and we are watching carefully. Are any of them germinating? They may not actually have, you know, fertile seed. And that's something that we need to test. But we need to be wary in all our plant growing activities into the future to be aware of a future Japanese knotweed.
But you can't get away from the fact that it's an absolutely beautiful tree. It's stunning. It's got this kind of multi-stem. It's got this rounded crown on it. And it's just outside the glass houses.
Yes, and it's the lack of twigs and branches on it. Because the leaves are so enormously long with lots of leaflets on them, it means the tree structurally looks very light and airy, even though it's got a big dense canopy, just because each individual leaf is actually gigantic in length.
Mm-hmm. Now, most people would turn right now and they'd go into the greenhouses, but we're going to head on straight because the next tree that I see here is a tree that you told me about a number of years ago. It's a very special tree too. It's the strawberry tree.
That's right, the arbutus. What is intriguing about arbutus is it is found in the west of Ireland from Kerry and Cork all the way up to County Sligo. This tree is found in the oak forests of the west of Ireland. And it has been, you know, speculated upon for centuries as to why is a tree that's more characteristic of the Mediterranean maquis vegetation, this dry, scrubby vegetation around the Mediterranean, also so happy in the Killarney oak forests. Mm.
It's got a beautiful stem. That's what I think attracts most people to it. It's got that, I suppose, strawberry-coloured stem.
Yes, although the strawberry is literally the appearance of its fruits, yeah. But they don't taste as good. So one of the amusing ideas of its name, Arbutus unedo, is that it is derived from the expression eat one, that you would only eat one to realise it wasn't a proper strawberry, it was a little insipid. But the bark, you're right, is, especially of the hybrid, there's a hybrid with a species from the east of the Mediterranean, Andrachne, and that has got beautiful stipple bark, and that's the individual that we're looking at here, the hybrid strawberry tree.
And this particular tree was planted by none other than
our president, President Michael D. Higgins, and it was during the period when he was the Minister of Arts, Culture and the Gaeltacht, and the Botanic Gardens fell under his remit way back in 1995. And to celebrate the completion of the restoration of the Curvilinear range here, he planted this, what was then a tiny little tree, and has now become a magnificent and beautiful addition to the garden.
Now, it's not as tall as the Tree of Heaven beside it, but there's something really very special about it. To me, it's the trunk.
Yes, the bark is particularly beautiful. It peels, it's got red, it's just multicoloured. Reds, oranges, pinks, sort of every possible red you can think of is present in the bark of this tree. And interestingly, in the middle of summer, this tree has got no flowers or fruit on it because this group of strawberry trees, they all flower in the middle of the winter. So they bloom in the middle of the winter, and actually their fruits take the entire 12 months to ripen. So it bears ripe fruits in December, January.
Now, there's one other tree I want to see. I'm not quite sure where it is in the gardens, but it's the Judas tree. Can we go there?
We certainly can. It's not far beyond us. And here, Terry, here is the Judas tree. It's a very large shrub more than anything else, but it's got these beautiful heart-shaped leaves. Yeah. And it's a plant, again, found in the East Mediterranean and much of Asia Minor.
Now, it has beautiful flowers in springtime, I believe.
Yes, it's covered in these purpley red flowers, which are arising almost straight out of the branches. So it does take on a very peculiar look, this deep red colour along its branches.
So the flowers are actually on the stem and on the branches, not necessarily high up in the canopy.
Exactly. It's a tree that bears its flowers cauliferously. So we call it a stem flowering tree.
And I presume that's to help with pollination with the likes of mammals, say.
Probably the most important thing is for the pods and fruits to be well hidden by the canopy. Any fruiting tree runs a strange twofold risk. It wants that fruit to be spread by a disperser, but it also wants to hide it from other animals that might want to eat the fruits. So it's hard to know why it has evolved in this way, but it has evolved to keep its little pods, because it's a member of the pea family, hidden inside the canopy and against the tree trunk.
So because it's in the pea family, does that mean then it has colonies of bacteria living within it?
It does. It has these root nodules, and it is one of the reasons that wherever we go into arid or very poor soils, we'll often find a huge number of legumes growing there, especially trees. So throughout North Africa, the Eastern Mediterranean, there are lots of leguminous trees and shrubs growing in very poor soils, and they are fixing their own nitrogen.
Which makes it very beneficial to the plant to be able to live in an area that's deficient in nitrogen.
And the other great feature of these legumes is, you know, we know they're protein rich, and that again is their huge quantity of nitrogen that they are fixing into their roots, however poor the soil is, and they're able therefore to produce very sort of protein rich seeds.
Now, the unusual thing about this tree is that we're led to believe, how true I don't know, maybe you will tell me, that this is the tree, the Judas tree, that Judas hung himself on after he betrayed Jesus.
Exactly. There are many theories as to why it got its name. And sometimes we can go through the literature and try to understand why did the botanist who gave a scientific name to something pick on that particular name? Or why did a folklore put a name on a tree? So, you know, we can look around at trees like oak and ash, and actually these are Danish words, and they're probably Viking names that arrived here. But the Judas tree, there are numerous stories about whether it was the tree on which Judas hung himself, having betrayed Christ, or it's the red colour of the flowers against the trunk, or did it come from Judea, the region in which it grows?
Yes, I've read that as well, that it's nothing to do with Judas.
Yeah.
But from the region, Judea, which is now Israel.
And another great tree is the cedar of Lebanon, which, yes, it grows in the hills of Lebanon there. But, you know, there's another cedar, the deodar cedar from northern India, from the Himalaya range. And that is Deodara, which is the tree of God, God's tree. So the way we acquire names or put names on plants, it's very interesting, the whole etymology of it. Often, you know, it's a Pandora's box that we open when we try and find out why did something get named that.
That's why taxonomy is really such an important science.
It is, because what we do in the form of botanical nomenclature, at least, is we have a very strict set of rules as to when a name has been officially given to a species of plant and how it's constructed.
And the important thing there is that once this name is given, it's given in Latin, it's got two words, but also it's common throughout the world. So that everyone, whether you're a scientist in Ireland or England or Israel or wherever it is, we all know what that plant is.
A great example is the bluebell. Mm. You know, the bluebell of a South African is a climber called Solia, or it's a little plant called Wallenbergia. The bluebell of New Zealand is a completely different plant, a Mertensia. And the bluebell of Scotland is the harebell.
Yeah.
So bluebell is a useless word to use when you're speaking in the English language. And therefore, we have to have a scientific name for the Hyacinthoides non-scripta, which is what we think of as the little bluebell.
But these names have gotten plants into trouble. And only very recently, in a conference in Madrid, there was a motion to change some of the names of these plants. Why?
Every 6 years or so, a meeting of the International Code of Botanical Nomenclature takes place, where the adjustment of rules or novel rules can be introduced. And at the last conference, two proposals were put forwards, one of which was to ban the use of naming trees after people, or when I say trees, all plants, that any plant, a new plant coming up, would not be given the name of a person, because there are risks involved. People that we realise were slave traders of the past have many plants named after them, and you say, gosh, that's very unfortunate and sort of unpleasant in a way. Can we just change that and correct all those names? Well, then you enter a problem where all of the literature contains a name like Hibbertia, and then we now realise that Mr. Hibbert was not a nice person, and should we change it? Or do we lose the integrity of all that literature of plant names? A second proposal was put forward to specifically ban the use of the word Kaffra. So a huge number of South African plants, in fact it's about 200 different species, were given the epithet, which is the second part of the name, Kaffra, which derives from an Arabic name, essentially meaning infidel. But it became a pejorative term. Through colonial periods, the word Kaffir became a very unpleasant and abusive term. So the proposal has been put forward to clean up the floras, if you like, of South Africa, to remove that name with a very simple orthographic alteration, i.e. a change in spelling, which is to knock off the initial C and turn it into Afra, essentially deriving from the word Africa. So suddenly these 200 plants can be thought of as no longer having the name Kaffra, but Afra. And this will make it much easier and more pleasing for everybody in that part of Africa to be able to read these floras without seeing a nasty reference to the past.
Well, that's fine for the plants, but I don't think the zoologists are following in your footsteps. I can think of two insects, one a beetle called after Adolf Hitler, and there's another one, a moth, called after Mussolini, and I'm sure there are many, many others, but the zoologists, they're not wanting to change.
They have their own set of rules. So the botanists have one set of rules, which covers actually fungi as well. So plants and fungi covered by one code, and then the other code covers that for animal names throughout the world. So there are distinct differences between our rules. They evolve as we also evolve sort of socially. And no, I think there's an appreciation for the same reason that the proposal to ban the use of inappropriate uses of people's names, that was turned down. Most of the botanists agreed this is going to be too destabilizing. The whole point of this set of rules is to create stability. And one of the most important rules we have is priority. The very first name that was applied to that plant should be the correct official name for it. And the other names we regard as a sort of junior synonyms. They fall under it. They're like extra nicknames for it, but we don't recognize them as having official status.
So whatever way we look at it, we may be moving slowly, but at least we're moving in the right direction.
Correct. It's a matter of looking at it in a holistic way, but that we all sit down and we say, okay, we will change this rule as long as it doesn't destabilize things. So this decision to rename all these plants as having the name Afra in them is something that most people agreed. That's a very clear, simple alteration that will make future floras a more pleasing read for everybody.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Terence Flanagan.
You're very welcome.
All right, we'll catch up with Terry again next month.